So, you spent your career, your initial career as an engineer in the Navy, retiring eventually as a captain. Were you doing design work then? What kind of projects were you involved with?
You mean in the Navy?
Right, right.
In the Navy, most of my work was involved in, professional career as a naval engineer, most of my work was involved in the construction and repair of nuclear submarines in the shipyards.
On the submarines, were you in Groton or anywhere around there?
No, I was in Pearl Harbor, Charleston, and Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and Mare Island.
Oh, okay. And so I guess what I want to figure out is how you ended up with the Herosoff Museum. So after you retired,
I went to work for Westinghouse. I was involved in hosting development and production of marine propulsion and power generation systems, mostly for the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly a lot of development work of new systems and new machinery concepts. And then the mandatory retirement at 65.
Mm-hmm.
Was living at the time, we were in California, been in California for 20 years. My wife and I are both from the East Coast. We never felt at home in California, so we moved back to New England. She's from Massachusetts, I'm from New York, so we picked Rhode Island.
Halfway in between.
In between, right.
Right.
And when I did that, I also decided I wanted to only do some marine surveying, so I took a course in marine surveying and started surveying boats in the New England, in the Rhode Island, Connecticut area.
Right. And then you eventually started volunteering at the museum?
Yeah, I volunteered at the museum. I started as a volunteer, just, like a docent. Then I talked to Carmen Pinero, who was the curator at the time, and I wanted to start getting involved back in a wooden boat, so I offered to him that I would survey any of the boat in the collection he wanted, and for free, and I'd give him a report. It'd be his report. They could do what they wanted, and it was a way for me to get more experience in a wooden boat. So I started surveying boats in the collection. I don't think Carter was very happy with it because he had his eye on some boats. He thought it'd be great to get him back sailing again. By the time I finished my surveys, it kind of was, the results were kind of disappointing in the possibilities of getting a boat back in the water for minimal cost. So.
Well,
but I enjoyed it a lot, and Carlton was a great person. Carlton was a heart and soul of the museum. He used to dress up like Captain Nat. He looked like Captain Nat. You get him in a Buzzards Bay boys boat and dressed up like Captain Nat. He looks just like the famous painting of Captain Nat in the Buzzards Bay boys boat. So.
So you were when Carlton passed away, I guess that was the year 2000, you were still a volunteer at the time.
I was a volunteer, right.
I guess you were something of like his assistant curator at the time?
No, they, off and on, at that time, one time the curator staff was, Carlton was a curator. He had an assistant curator for a while, Chris Trowbridge, who worked with him a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a Shepard fellow whose name escapes me at this minute, who handled America's Cup Hall of Fame, helped set it up.
Was that a guy named Mike Passari?
No. Mike Passari was in the staff of the museum. I'll think it was the same fellow who set up the America's Cup database at the Museum of Yachting.
Mm-hmm.
And, it'll come to me while we're talking sometime.
Sure.
But, to me, when Carlton passed on, I think he was so much of the heart of the museum. And, the museum at that time, especially, was a very Bristolian organization. And you're not a Bristolian unless, you and your forebears and their forebears grew up in Bristol. Then it was, the place was really not ready, I think, for a professional curator to come in and start doing things like a professional curator would and disrupting maybe what Carlton and Halsey had spent so much time setting up and conceiving. So that I was asked if I would, on a part-time basis, become a deteriorating at the museum. It was kind of like I was a non-threatening guy from that point of view. You know, they got comfortable. Although I lived in Portsmouth and not in Bristol, they had gotten comfortable with me coming across the bridge every couple of days.
Well, it's close enough.
Right. Well, it wasn't close enough for some people. But anyway, I was asked if I'd take the curator job part-time basis. Carlton and I struck a verbal agreement, and that's stuck till, you know, pretty much till today. So that's where I am.
So you still work, are you still, you know, part-time at the moment, right?
Yep.
Oh, you are?
Yeah. I've always been a part-time. You know, it's always been that, you know, not...
You come in when you can, basically.
Not a member of the staff, you know. I was like a, you know, I guess you'd say a consultant or an outside contractor.
Right.
I've always been like an outside contractor.
Right. So... I guess in 2000 you became the part-time curator. But
yeah, I think so in March. I think in March, shortly after Karn passed on.
Right. But you didn't really have years of experience of curatorial curation?
I had no experience. My background is
right.
Naval engineer, mostly marine engineering background.
Right.
I had a degree in naval architecture and marine engineering, but you know, I've never was involved in the design end of yachts or, in the boating industry. I grew up in Larchmont, New York.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, and I was a paid crew on a 43-foot Alden schooner at Larchmont Yacht Club, and she happened to be also the mothership for the S-boat fleet in Larchmont.
Hmm.
So I got to see Herzog. I heard people talking about Herzog boats, so it's great to be back involved with it because I'm doing kind of something what as a kid, I looked at those boats and said, they're pretty neat.
Over the years, though, you've done, you know, quite a bit with things like the Classic Yacht Symposium and the Curator's Log. So I guess, how'd you learn the ins and outs of being a curator? OJT, I guess?
Yes, yeah, pretty much on the job. There's some great people before. Mike Bazzari, who was on the staff, did a lot of work. Carl did a lot of work, a lot of writing. He and Maynard had done the Herzog for Bristol, which is really a standard and a classic, and which we republished in, I think, 2005.
Yeah, I own that.
There are many stories about Herzog. There's many ways of looking at the Herzog Corporation and the family, but you know, I'd probably come back to Herzog for Bristol book more than anything else.
Yeah, I own three copies of that. One of each version and one signed.
And Carlton had, the museum had published, and Carlton and Halsey had participated in Nat's Recollections.
Mm-hmm.
And also, just before I got to the museum, they published, about that time, their last letters.
Mm-hmm.
And so those three, along with L. Francis' book, Wizard of Bristol, Captain and Wizard of Bristol,
mm-hmm.
they are, so a lot of there certainly is a lot of background information.
Mm-hmm.
To work from. Kurt Hasselbeck at MIT has always been very helpful to the museum. It's always been very helpful to me. The fact that they have all the drawings at MIT, they also have, MIT also provided us with a copy of the, we have a microfilm, a copy of their microfilm.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have the capability to review the Herzog drawings in our museum. That helps a lot. So.
All right. So, you know, you've obviously worked with many of the luminaries in the world of Herzog and maritime history, Halsey, Carlton, Maynard, Kurt. Is there anybody else or any individuals who stand out in your mind as being, you know, particularly knowledgeable or helpful? And these guys obviously are the cream of the crop. Anybody else?
Well, there are a number of people. First off, I guess if it wasn't for Halsey Herzog, we wouldn't have the museum. You know, his father and mother started it. but sure, Halsey carried it through its lean years, and you know, setting up the buildings where we are, and achieving, you know, getting really some very significant donations to the collection. Mm-hmm. He is, you know, Halsey is the, he's the, not only one of the originators, but he's probably our largest benefactor because, you know, he houses the model collection, the F model collection in the museum, which is people come from all over the world to see. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, Klaus von Linder, who, you know, just is an amazing researcher. Mm-hmm. And I met Klaus, I guess, when I first started curating. He was over here at that time researching catamaran development. Mm-hmm. And just an amazing person, an amazing researcher, and certainly has added a lot to the understanding of the Herzog Manufacturing Company and the family. And, you know, often look at what Klaus does, and I think, you know, he's doing work that we should have been doing, but for one reason or another, we never seem to get to do. There's a lot of builders. You know, there's people like Ed McClave. Ed McClave probably has the greatest knowledge of the construction techniques of Herzog, not only what they did, but why they did it. And is able to express that in the writing, in drawings, and in design work that I think is unmatched. And there are a lot of other amazing people involved in restoration, and have done some great work for the museum, like Taylor Snedeker, who restored our Clara. And I would often, when I was restoring Clara, which is Captain Nett's 1887 Cat Yaw, I'd often go down to Taylor Snedeker to see how things are doing. And Bill Taylor, I'd find him sitting in the middle of what was to be the salon, looking at things and trying to think through how would Captain Nat have looked at it. And that's the way they carried out the total project. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are people all up and down the East Coast that do amazing work as well as around the world. So.
All right.
But those are a couple.
Thanks. In a typical small museum like yours, funding constraints are probably the fact of life, and it limits the size of the staff that you've got. And obviously, since the organization would cease to exist without effective revenue generation, chasing donations and what have you, a good portion of that limited in size staff is devoted to organizational development and fundraising. And I think probably oftentimes at the expense of the curatorial function that the museum was originally set up for. I assume this is the case at the Herzog Museum. And, I imagine you oftentimes get frustrated with some of the financial constraints you have to deal with.
Small museum, in recent years, the attendance and donations are down at all maritime museums.
Mm-hmm.
All gone through, going through some hard times. The museum has gone through some staff and management changes. You know, it's basically a museum that was a family museum. And as time goes on, it's a difficult transition to a management structure the founding family is not the key element, or is not as key an element, or as an overriding element as it was to start with. Mm-hmm. And so that's an issue that's going on in our museum. As I say, it's typical of many small museums. We haven't had the money we'd like to put into our exhibits. I mean, we've had very short funding and funding exhibits. You know, a lot of what we do, you try to develop concept of what you'd like to do with exhibits or with restorations and things, but those ideas only work if you have a strong funding structure within the museum, or if you can enthuse some donor who says that's a project I want to follow. And we've had some key people like that. You know, one of the, since I've been there, one of the major things we've done is the restoration of the choir, where we've had that one benefactor who really looked at this stripped-out old hall, been partially restored, and understanding a Nat's close relationship to that boat. I think it's the only boat, one of two boats we have a photograph of Nat sitting, you know, really not doing anything. There aren't many photographs of him not doing anything. He stuck with us, and she is very close to completion and is a great part of our collection.
You know, interestingly, as an aside, I spoke to a guy in California who had owned Clara out there, I'm going to guess, in the 1950s, prior to,
Yeah, he was down Newport Beach, I think.
Yeah. I spoke to the guy. This is an interesting comment. Apparently, he had been in touch with L. Francis. I don't know, looking for advice on maintaining the boat or what have you. And L. Francis told him, or he told me, based on this conversation, that L. Francis had, his kids and Harris and Nat's kids had something in common. L. Francis was conceived on the same bunk as my two kids were. You know, forward bunk, starboard side.
I hadn't heard that.
Yeah.
That's great.
I have a note somewhere. If you're interested, I'll forward it to you.
Well, that kind of thing continues. We've had a couple of times they've rousted out a couple who was enjoying themselves together in the salon of Torch, our Fisher Island.
Oh, really? In the museum?
Right.
Oh, jeez.
I guess maybe something about Arizona boats make people want to get close to one another.
Right.
Clara's an amazing story because she sailed for over 100 years. For about 100 years. And she started her 100-year overhaul in 1980. She sailed in the Cat Yawl, a Ketch, and eventually a schooner. And so and a sloop. She sailed for a cutter at one time. So she quite a boat.
Yeah. So you were just talking about the change in leadership at the museum. I guess that took place, I don't know, a year or so ago, that Halsey took a...
it's an ongoing process, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard informally that there are a contingent of folks who aren't entirely happy with the change. Can you comment at all on the new management team, what kind of changes they're bringing, or, is there a new change in direction, or where do you see the museum going?
We've gone through several years of changes, both the staff and board. I think we've got a great board. I think we've got a great board right now.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably, Halsey's a member of the board of directors. We probably have more involvement of board members today than we've had in significant time since I've seen him. I think they're moving the museum in the right direction. They're trying to get it. They're working together on a strengthen its financial underpinnings, which is not easy these days.
No, for sure.
And so I'm encouraged with the direction the museum's taking.
Great. What do you think the partnership with Mystic Seaport means, both to the Harrison Museum and Mystic? It's not clear to me how what the benefits are going to be. You have any thought on that?
There's an agreement that's been signed, and it's something that's. The idea is to kind of, I believe it's my words, is kind of work through it slowly to know, each museum remains independent, and it's an alliance or an affiliation. I forget the exact word that's in the announcement.
Mm-hmm.
But the museums are independent.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, with the demands on staff these days, it's being approached slowly. So because you can't put one organization can't put demands on a staff of the other organization.
Right.
We're working in our museum. We have a new exhibits and collection committee. We're trying to look at the new ways of looking at our exhibits and our collection, and better organizing and actually institutionalizing some of it, rationalizing the collection. Through the years, we've had many things donated to the museum, you know, which we were happy to accept, but may not be appropriate to the mission of the museum. So we have new exhibits and collection organization, a strong support, the leadership from members of the board. We plan to be meeting with Mystic and see how they might be able to help us and advise us in some areas. So I think from that point of view, it's going to be very helpful to us. So it's something that's being worked through slowly, and with a limited number of projects or connecting points between the two organizations, so we keep it under control and don't place unwarranted demands on either of the two organizations.
That's a good answer, John. Thanks. It reminds me of another question that I have, with my own experience with computers and what have you, it seems that the ubiquity of the internet and Google and electronic databases and what have you provide the ability to find and distribute information in unlimited ways. There's unprecedented levels of access by huge audiences and unprecedented amounts of information, and it's kind of like the curator's dream, and the ability to use a computer to generate that access or to provide that access instead of expanding payrolls and increasing costs is really the executive director's dream. So I guess the question is, I wonder if the museum leadership is considering the development or the expansion of some sort of digital collections, digitizing documents and making them available electronically, that sort of thing. Go ahead.
Through the years, we've looked at digitizing various parts of our collection. And I would say we don't have a specific plan direction at this time, but I expect that the new exhibits and collection committee, as we go through this process, we'll be developing one.
Mm, okay.
Exactly what that's going to be, I don't know right now.
Yeah.
There is there's issues how much material you get online. And we have online right now. We have our library catalog online.
Mm-hmm.
We've just been working to better organize. We have some interns working with us this summer, working to better organize our digital collection, our scanned photo collection. So that we can make it better useful for ourselves and also for researchers and others who are interested in those items.
Mm-hmm.
We've been doing a fair amount of work in improving our America's Cup Hall of Fame collection, improving the files of the America's Cup. We've been cataloging the Ed DeMoulin. Remember a number of America's Cup teams in the 1980s gave us, and a little bit earlier, gave us his business papers, cataloging his business papers. So there's been a lot of work behind the scenes and better organizing and understanding what we do have within the museum. As far as how much we can put out there digitally and when and what format, we're going to have to work through that. with the Certificate of Collections Committee.
Okay. On a related note, I guess it was maybe April during the last symposium. You were telling me that Halsey's got a considerable treasure trove of documentation in his personal collection. Do you have any idea what might happen with those? Will he donate to the museum? Give them, you know, pass them through to Harrisoft Designs? Pass them on through his family? You have any idea?
No, you have to ask him.
Yeah, fair question. Fair answer, rather.
We have a large amount of materials in the museum, Nat Herzog's collection, many of which are placed in the museum by Halsey. You know, I might say, you mentioned the Herzog Designs. You know, having Herzog and Halsey's organization, Herzog Designs, across the street, museum should be in the job of giving publicity plugs, but, you know, having them across the street, now fully open for business, where they with some early boats they have that they're, you know, they have a, they're, I guess they're becoming a brokerage now too, and really having that active flow of people who are, you know, currently involved in designing, building boats, I think really adds a that and the Bristol boat building of Dan Shea, who's building the H-20, which is a Herzog one of Herzog's designs.
Yeah, Phantom.
That activity really adds to the flavor of the whole campus, the Herzog campus.
Mm-hmm.
So I for one, I'm just happy to see them there, and the traffic they bring to see people move between the museum and their location. It's really kind of fun and interesting to see.
Hmm. Right. Okay, John, that's kind of pretty much it. A couple of a last question or two. If you look back on what you've done so far as curator, is there anything you would have done differently?
Yeah. I would have, allowed myself to be distracted to all the other things that go on, and I would have done a lot more in organizing and documenting and cataloging Captain Nat's papers, which are not yet finished. And also, probably done more in helping to strengthen our volunteer organization. Volunteer organization is very important in the museum. The museum, as I mentioned earlier, kind of a family-based museum. That family extends beyond the Herzogs to the many Bristolians who were friends of theirs, admired them, what Herzog did, or had family had worked there and were proud of the work they did. And to that volunteer base is passed on because they're in their later years. And we've been I probably didn't do enough to help develop a new volunteer structure. A great person, Maggie Church, right now, is working on that. I guess the only other comment I make before I close is, you know, in rationalizing our collection of museum, you know, we have a number of boats, not a lot, but that we are unable to restore, care for in the way we'd like to, and we don't have room to store it. So we are working through our collection and have in some cases sold one or two boats. We sell them under a protocol, I'd say, that requires they be responsibly restored a certain period of time. And various other conditions on it. The purpose is, if we can't restore something and it's not, and it's, it might say surplus because we have other boats or representatives of that period or time or class or type within the collection, we would like to see it, in many cases, sailing again. And we've been trying to do some things. We have some S boats. We're trying to work to see how, with others, to see how the S boats in Narragansett Bay can be enhanced and possibly by restoring some of the S boats we have. And so I think we have five.
Mm-hmm.
So we are working on that. If Ben has been interested in talking to us about it, we haven't talked to him.
Yeah, I keep a list of all those boats that are available, and I periodically refer them to you guys. I don't know if anybody follows up, but...
Yes, we do. In fact, we just... a graduate of IRIS, a recent graduate of IRIS, has taken on a project. He has taken from us a Marlin.
Oh, Seth Hagen?
That's what I think we... It doesn't have a nameplate, but I think we figured out...
Oh, well, I think we did figure it out, and you recently...
I think it's 1421, but I forget right now. It's 1421 or 1422.
Yeah, it's one or the other.
But he just, in fact, he just took it from us on Friday.
Well, you know the guy's name?
Yeah, John Headley.
John Headley, and he's in Bristol?
No, he's he has a shop with some other in Newport.
Ah.
And he just graduated in this last class of IRIS.
Oh, great.
Great guy, and I was looking forward to seeing him. Marlin
progressing. Great. So, John, before I stop the recording, is there anything else you'd like to discuss?
Oh, yeah, I guess in mentioning the people who've done some great things, I think of, the Herzog Collection, I really feel bad because there's many other great people who I haven't mentioned, but I'd like to mention you because of the work you've done. Amazing. You start off by really trying to figure out where all 364.
Yeah, I don't think I'll ever come to the end of that.
Yes, sir. No, but you're coming closer every year.
Yeah.
Since then, you've gone on to other classes, and what you've established is a place to talk about Herzog, look at Herzog, understand Herzog, and mix it up with other people who want to talk about Herzog. It's great. Steve, so I think you're one of my heroes.
Oh, jeez. Well, I'm glad you find the work useful.